from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Good morning. Happy Tuesday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Good morning to you, Ursula.
Good morning, G. That was a great first hour. If any of you guys missed it, we invite you to check out our podcast, which is available every day after the show. Actually, while we're talking about it, apparently some of our listeners had a hard time finding the podcast yesterday. So I don't know if that is something, Nick, that you can help out
with. Yeah, I think
we
figured it out on our software now that's up and running.
Okay, perfect. But so you can catch up with any part of the show, which is great because I know that a lot of you can't stick with us for all 3 hours, but we also know, G, that many of you do, and we love you for that.
Absolutely. Coming up at 10:30, 2 out of 3 workers at this particular company struggle to afford food and housing. We talk about that at 10:30. But right now, let's get to it. The top 3 things that you need to know at 10.
Number 1.
Have you been having a hard time finding an at-home COVID test? Yep, they're still hard to find. But President Biden wants to make them free if you have insurance and if you can afford the cost out of pocket first. So we get details on that from CBS's Stephen Portnoy.
The policy takes effect on January 15th. Starting Saturday, private insurance companies will be required to reimburse Americans for their out-of-pocket costs for tests. The covered limit is 8 tests per month per person on each plan. Insurers are being asked to point customers to preferred pharmacies and retailers, where, if arrangements can be made, the tests would be provided for free. If not, consumers can file a claim for reimbursement.
And you took issue with this, G.
It's good that insurance will now cover 8 home tests a month. It's bad that it involves reimbursement. I don't like that. And much worse, 28 million Americans have no insurance. There's that part of it. And there's going to be the problem of, oh, good luck in finding these tests. That's another problem. Oh, and by the way, those on with Medicaid, yeah, this didn't expand to those on Medicaid as well. Because at this time, it says those who are on Medicare will not be able to get their at-home COVID-19 test reimbursed through this program. So having insurance reimburse you, to me, is not a solution that I really like to this problem. And when I think, I'll simply end it with this. When I think about what we are going through in trying to get tests, I think about not me, because I think I'm going to be fine. I think about so many that won't be. I think about the many people in this country that truly are going to need it. Because, see, I don't have to leave the house. I literally don't have to leave the house. I don't have small kids. I am not someone that's it. But it's going to be people like me, people that make more money than me, people that are in better situations. These will be the folks that will be getting the test. And the people that do need the test and they really need it will be single moms or single dads or families that have little kids worried about going to daycare and those that have to go to their essential jobs.
Well, I just heard from one, actually. And I just responded and I told her I want to respond in more detail after the show. But this is listener Christy who says, "Hi, Ursula and G. I'm so frustrated with our COVID situation right now. We got all our shots, the booster, flu, everything, did all the masking and social distancing. We still got COVID. At least we assume it was COVID since we had the symptoms of sore throats, coughing and fatigue. But we tested negative several times at home, ran out of those tests and couldn't get any more. We took our kid to urgent care, stood in line for hours. She was told she had mono. Apparently, mono is a common secondary infection after COVID. Half of our high school is absent. Teachers refuse to provide enough work to pass classes from home. No notice on a mono outbreak at the high school. No masks at the cafeteria. We're hearing of folks getting the Delta strain and then getting Omicron." By the way, that's true. One does not make you immune to the other. Why is this not shared at school? We learned that cloth and surgical masks are not effective with this new strain and only the N93 masks work. So no news on this from schools. So many friends are sick. Some close friends just died. It is so frustrating. I'm sure Christy speaks for so many parents. We hear from those of you who say, hey, this was just a mild cold. For one of my kids, it was probably a little bit more than a cold, but not quite like a bad flu. The other one got hammered. And both of them had been, they're both healthy, no underlying issues. So I hear your frustration. And of course, we need to speak for people who are in different positions than we are, because, we have a good, I don't have young kids at home. I don't even know what I would do right now.
You don't sleep a lot. That's for one.
I know.
Now, Chef, can you tell? But Chef, you have small. Can you please tell our listeners what you are going through right now?
Yeah. So, in short, Matthew, my 5-year-old, he tested positive last week on Thursday. He spent a couple days, sick, really feeling yucky. Now the baby has it, most likely. However, she's tested negative 5 days in a row, but she's very sick. She can barely breathe because she's so congested. I think the real issue with the tests right now is if you're not a person who has an extra spare 2 hours per day to try and go out and find either rapid tests for your kid or go out and get one of the PCR tests at a testing facility, you cannot come back to school or daycare in many situations. You need that negative test, right? And I have two kids. My daughter cannot go back to her daycare until 14 days after my son's 10-day quarantine. That's 24 days. That's what her facility requires, right? Now, if I cannot go get a PCR test because it's impossible to get one, or they're saying you have to have symptoms in order to make an appointment, when am I supposed to bring her back? For all the parents that have to go back to work after 5 days, and the school says, hey, it's still 10, unless you have a negative test and not one of the rapid ones. So many of the things that we rely on require a test. And to have, at this point in the pandemic, a shortage of either rapid tests or the PCR ones is ludicrous. I mean, I assumed that we would have some sort of level of competency, a backup plan in case of a massive surge with a Democratic presidential administration, right? Remember at the beginning of the pandemic when they talked about, oh gosh, the Trump administration decimated the stockpile of PPE. Well, where's your stockpile of tests, President
right?
Biden? Where are they? This is too late. Like, 2 weeks after the peak of the Omicron surge, that's too late for so many people, and they're going to be out of work. Their kids are going to be out of school. There's no additional unemployment benefits. A lot of people in this country do not have the ability to take off as much sick time as they need or paid family leave like we do in this state. So this is a cluster, and I'm extremely disappointed in this administration that they did not see this coming, and they decided to take massive swift action when Omicron was already here instead of beforehand.
First of all, Chef, fire.
Yes.
Thank you for giving that. I really appreciate that. And in that speech that Biden gave in early December, he outlined the plans to distribute 500 million at-home coronavirus tests at that time, test kits. I went nuts and crazy then and told people this is not enough. I said it then. And I cannot believe that, again, like, you would think that this administration would come in and be on top of this. But I just feel like it's like this. Well, we did better than the last guy. Okay, what does that mean? Like, you're continuing to be behind. And that is the problem that I have. So here we are right now. If you think I'm excited about this, no. Why are we having it to where you have to go be reimbursed? That is so backwards. Just give people free tests. What if this was a pandemic? What if over 850,000?
What if this were a pandemic? It is a pandemic.
What if 850,000 Americans died in this country? And we're talking about reimbursement? Am I just going to walk through this wall right here by myself on this? This is bothering me so bad. But again, I'm good, though. And that's the problem. We have so many people talking about these topics, and they are comfortable. They're good. Life is great for them.
Yeah, they're telling you just live like normal. And
they don't even have to leave.
Yes. So here's a question for you, Chef, though, because you're staying at home. You have not tested positive, right?
Correct.
So what is our company telling you about coming in?
I was actually not aware of this, but they told me to stay home because I have a continuing case in the household. I was under the impression that, hey, if you've had your three shots and you test negative, then, you know, you're good to come into work anywhere. But I think our work, like so many other workplaces, is seeing, hey, you know what? If we get a whole bunch of people who are out at the same time, and work is the nexus for those infections, there's so many workplaces that are they're just out of luck. And I have the ability to work from home.
Yes,
I am
many
lucky
people
in that.
Don't.
I'm fortunate. What happens if you have to stay home for 24 days because one of your kids has COVID and your job expects you to be there? You're out of a job.
Right. Thank you.
Number two.
I mean, I wish I could come up with some, you know, nice bow to wrap around that, but that's the reality. Okay, so here's another one, and I heard your discussion this morning, and I'm really going to leave it to you, but I want to, for people who didn't hear it, as you know, banning books from schools is something that has been a long cherished tradition in this country, and we're in a renaissance of sorts right now because there are schools that are under siege from parents who want books with controversial titles or content to be taken off the bookshelves. And that is happening up in Mukilteo, where parents spoke out recently at a school board meeting to decide whether Harper Lee's novel To Kill a Mockingbird should be removed from the ninth grade required reading list. And there was a parent who complained to the principal of Kamiak High School that the book has a quote-unquote white savior theme and uses the N-word 50 times without pointing out that it's derogatory. And among those who want the book actually off the reading shelf, this might come as a surprise to you, is this high school literature teacher.
Is this book, in fact, a cherished classic for white people or for members of the BIPOC community? We need to examine very closely whose view of history, whose historiography, and whose collective memory we are protecting and upholding and calling exempt from scrutiny.
There are parents, though, including this parent, who says the book's unacknowledged racism is an important history lesson.
The use of the derogatory N-word is significant to the understanding of how prejudice works to destroy both the user and the receiver.
So I'm going to send this to you, G, because I think you said it so beautifully. Should this be taught in schools? Should it continue to be in a ninth grade reading list?
Yes.
And why?
And let me explain. Books from our past, even when not politically correct by today's standards, should be included in our education so that we learn from the past and be able to correctly move forward. Obscuring the past actually allows what to happen. It allows the past to be repeated. This story, To Kill a Mockingbird, was inspired by the case of the Scottsboro boys, where nine black boys ranging in age from 13 and 19 were falsely accused of sexually assaulting two white girls. The Scottsboro trials, in which the youth were sentenced to death by an all-white jury, despite the weak testimonies of witnesses, represented at that time the African-American experiences within the United States of America in its criminal justice system. False allegations, particularly about black men being rapists, have been reinforced over and over and over again. Let's go back to 1915, The Birth of a Nation. Remember, that film was played in the White House for our leaders during that time. That celebrated the Ku Klux Klan as heroes after a white woman jumps off a cliff to avoid the risk of being raped by a black man. This, what we have been talking about, I told the story with Dave Ross and Colleen this morning. These conversations, and I hope you don't have kids in the car because I'm about to say something right now I really don't want your kids to hear. These conversations are things that I talked about with my grandma. Like this ain't 400 years ago. No. And this next part I'm about to tell you, this is the part I don't want kids to hear. It used to be, it wasn't even illegal to rape a black woman in this country. I'm bringing that up because when we, in February, it's going to be called Black History Month. Black history in America is U.S. history.
Right.
So the same people that are going to agree with me, actually, some of the same people that are going to say, no, 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 don't take this out of the school, the curriculum. Some of those same people also want to cherry pick other things in when it comes to history. So I'll give an example. George Washington, the first president of the United States. Did he have wooden teeth? Did he? Did George Washington have wooden teeth? What? And if you're listening to that and you've heard that, why do you think that? Because that is an example of how our history has been scrubbed to tell different stories. So when you talk about history, tell it all, or else it gets confusing. This is not about making anybody feel guilty. So if we're going to teach it all and don't cherry pick. And oh, by the way, George Washington had teeth of his slaves. But go ahead.
But I think you said it so well. And I also think that it's an opportunity. It is an opportunity to have these difficult conversations. It is an opportunity to, you know, if you're against the N-word, we're looking at it, how it was used in context and not in proper context. And those are learning opportunities. And I think one of our listeners sent a message and said, you know, if you are going to ban To Kill a Mockingbird, you're basically killing a mockingbird. I mean, that is one of the classics. That is one of the novels that I would hope that every student gets to read. Because and I would hope it would make you ask questions and help you understand the history and why some of those things from yesteryear are still impacting us today. And what can we learn from that? And how can we be different? Again, it's never to make someone feel guilty. Why would someone today, a young person today, feel guilty about something that happened years ago? Why not empower that person and empower that student to make different choices in the future?
Good stuff, Ursula. Coming up next, 2 out of 3 workers at this company struggle to afford food and housing. Well, time to have a real conversation about wages. It's G and Ursula. It's a spring affair.
This is the G and Ursula Show, our Tuesday morning edition. As always, we love to hear from you. Text us at 888-973-CHIRO. That's 888-973-5476. The question this segment is, should minimum wage be a livable wage? And there's a reason why we ask this question. There is new research out of Los Angeles that more than two-thirds of Kroger grocery workers are struggling to afford food, housing, or other basic needs because of low wages and part-time work schedules. And this report claims that 14% of Kroger workers are homeless now or have been homeless during the past year. And it's not just a Kroger problem. The list of big companies in the United States who have employees that are relying on public assistance is a long one. We've all heard about Amazon and Walmart, but in this particular case, we're talking about Kroger because this was a report done by an economic roundtable group based on findings of a survey of more than 10,000 workers at these stores owned in Southern California, Colorado, and Washington. Kroger is QFC and Fred Meyer and a bunch of other stores across the country. But so let's start with there. Should the people who work at a Kroger store be able to pay their expenses?
Yes. And let me go ahead and just lay out some things. Last year in 2021, Kroger's total company sales were $31.9 billion in the third quarter alone, compared to $29.7 billion for that same period the year before. That doesn't count fuel, which sales increased 2.9% compared to the same period of that last year. I also want to point out and remind you guys that Kroger ended its $2 an hour hazard pay raise 2 months into the pandemic and opted to close stores in some cities that passed laws mandating hazard pay raises. Now, they're in a situation where low wages and expiring government assistance has workers struggling to make ends meet. So the answer to my question, should they be paid livable wages? Yes. And what
does that look like, though? What would then be a livable wage? What do you think would be a reasonable for someone who is a cashier, for example? What would be a reasonable hourly wage or a salary for someone who works in that position?
In the city of Seattle, it costs $27 an hour to be able to rent an apartment here in the Seattle area. So how about we just pay, how about $25 an hour? Mm-hmm. How about a livable, how about enough to where we, the taxpayer, because you guys, you know, people love to say this. We, the taxpayers, don't have to subsidize the income for these folks that aren't making enough. I don't know. It's hard for me on a daily basis sometimes to talk about this because I scratch my head at why we as a society are okay with so many people struggling. And yet on a day-to-day basis, we look at Amazon out there in the state of Nevada. For the second consecutive year, Amazon ranks as the company with the most employees and dependents on Medicaid in the state of Nevada. Amazon's number of employees and dependents on Medicaid increased from 7,892 in 2019 to 14,331 in 2020. Amazon employs more than 22,000 workers in Nevada, with about 6,596 employees and 7,735 dependents on Medicaid. So if folks want to be mad at me and argue with me about, gee, you always want to pay people more. You always want to pay people more. Okay. Well, then I'm going to ask you, when are we going to say we need to be the ones to not be having to subsidize income for these others, for them and their dependents? Mm-hmm. You can't have it both ways.
No, I hear you. I hear you loud and clear. Now, I just looked at what Kroger's response is to this story, and Kroger is saying that I see that they said that on average, I want to say that they are paying $24 an hour in many cases. I'm trying to find it real quick. With wages and benefits included. So, yeah, pay an average compensation of more than $24 an hour to cover wages, health care, and retirement benefits, compared with the $18 an hour average for U.S. retail workers. And there are people who will argue that if you want to have a livable wage, you're not going to go into these professions. But then you also have to look at it and say, well, if you want people to work in these professions, you have to make it a livable wage.
For so many years, it has been always against the employees. If you want better, if you want more money, go get a better job. Ain't no fun when the rabbit gots the gun. Okay, Kroger. Okay, Amazon. You guys are doing your thing. Okay, that's cool. Don't worry about it. Because the day has come and the day is here that employees are not about to sit here and be underpaid no more. So you better be an Amazon. You better be a Walmart, or you better be a Kroger, because the days of being an employer and paying crap wages, those days have come to an end. Well, and you always say, let the free market decide. Yes, the free market is about to decide, baby.
And there was a sign right outside the QFC I went into and said, please, if you don't get help right away, we are understaffed. Be kind. Mm-hmm.
I just assume everybody's understaffed, and I just give them all the love.
Well, that should happen anyway, right? Staffed or understaffed. Good one, Nick.
Hey, coming up next in scenarios, somebody's getting married in May. By the way, this is not me, okay? All right? But somebody's getting married in May, And they got all kinds of plans. And there's a disagreement about chocolate fountains. We'll discuss that next. Gina. It is the Gene Ursula Show. Happy Tuesday to all of you. We do agree to disagree coming up next. And boy, agree to disagree is so good when Chef is in the building. Let's get to scenarios.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
I'm getting married in May. And we're in the middle of all of the plans. It's a nightmare, but I never thought I'd get hung up on this one particular detail. I took my fiance cake shopping over the weekend. I thought it'd be quick. We tried a few cakes. He'd say what he liked and we'd make a decision. But when we left, he dropped a bomb on me. He told me to get whatever cake I wanted, but he wants just one thing. It turns out that when his brother was married, they had one of those chocolate fountains and the guests loved it. I thought, okay, that's fine. We can have one of those. But then he said he doesn't want to just do what his brother did. He wants to one-up him. He wants just one thing, a giant chocolate and cheese bar with gourmet chocolate desserts and rare cheeses from all over the world. I ask, where will we get such a thing? And he has already looked it up. So I ask how much this would cost. We're paying for the entire wedding ourselves, and I'm in charge of the expenses, and weddings are expensive. What he wants will cost over $6,000. I think it's ridiculous. I mean, I want the day to be special, and I want him to feel included. But chocolate and cheese for $6,000? Really? It's the only thing he's asked for. But isn't this a goofy thing to want for his wedding? 888-973-CHIRO is the State Roofing text line. Ursula, you're up to bat first.
I would actually say that I love that the fiance is involved, has an opinion, is very passionate about one thing that he wants as part of the wedding. And so I would try to include it in some kind of way. Because so often it's all about what the bride wants, and you don't often hear what the groom wants. And in this case, I think that there can be some kind of compromise. It doesn't have to be about one-upping the brother, but personally, I love the idea of chocolate and cheese.
Hey, I'm not going to lie to you.
I'll take that over the cake any day.
Look, check this out.
Sorry, but...
you know what I'm saying? We can cut out the cake. We can cut out the DJ.
No, matter of fact, you got to keep the DJ.
Wait a minute.
Or find music. Yeah,
We can cut out some guests. Some of these guests I don't even really like anyways. Chef, what you got, bro?
You definitely do not want to do the chocolate fountain. And mine is not a financial reason for why you don't want to do it. It's actually a hygiene reason. Because I don't know if you've ever seen a chocolate fountain that 100 people are dipping into. I mean, I'm sketched out about doing the fondue pot with, three close friends. Ain't no way I'm doing some, bacteria-ridden pool of chocolate with 100 other guests. Those things are gross, and they're gimmicks. That being said, bring on the cheese.
Wait, the chocolate fountain can be done in a somewhat safe manner, I would think, if you have the sticks. Yeah. Everyone gets one
you have
stick
the sticks.
And they do it. Yeah.
And it's totally good.
You
and you can totally use a public swimming pool with complete confidence that no little kid has peed in there, because the vast majority of people know how to use a pool without doing that.
But don't you
people
still
do not know how to not double dip.
But don't you still
There's
go
always
swimming?
At least a couple.
Okay.
I do. I don't. Yeah. Chlorine.
Do you guys double dip when nobody's looking?
That silence means yes.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you, Nick.
Dipping means,
thank
you know,
you,
like
Nick.
When you're sharing the dip on the table.
You know what double dipping is, Ursula.
I have.
Let's not do your Ursula dance around topics.
Yeah, I think most people have double dipped if they were honest. Real.
Ursula, Jeff, 360 text in and says, we need context. How much are they spending for the entire wedding? You know what? That's where I don't know how much they are spending. Like, are they spending $20,000 for the wedding and it's $6,000? You know, that's important too. Because, and I also, this is one of those, okay, I got to throw you under the bus, Ursula. We're only hearing her side to the story. You know what I mean? Like, what is she? What is something that she spent? Like, how much is your dress? Usually the dress is more. How much was your engagement ring? How much is your wedding band is going on that engagement ring? How much, you know, all that stuff. So I guarantee you, my man is probably saying, look, it's whatever. I'm just here so I don't get fined. All I want is some cheese and some chocolate. And by the way,
you and I are in agreement. We're in agreement. We both are saying the groom should get a little something.
Oh. Yeah, but that's because you want to be guests at the wedding, not because you want to pay for the wedding, right?
He said, come up with some kind of compromise. Yeah, so maybe a smaller version of this big fat chocolate and cheese bar. Or maybe, you know, get Hershey's level versus Godiva level. You know, some way to bring down the expense.
I'll say this. I can come to a gathering and somebody says, hey, we're just having cheese from all over the world, and then we're having all different crackers, and that's all we're having. I'm there. Cheese and crackers is the greatest meal ever. I love it. I love cheese. Well, I love cheese, but not all of me loves cheese.
Okay. Someone said, make sure that your parting gift for the wedding is a roll of toilet paper.
Ursula.
For the lactose intolerant. Ursula. I think they know better.
Is your career coming down for this?
Yes.
I mean, come on.
Yes. It always happens in scenarios. If I'm going to jeopardize my career, it's always in this segment.
It's always a fun time in scenarios.
Yeah, right?
Well, Ursula's hanging on. Like, 33 years, and it came down to scenarios. Hey, coming up next, we're going to be doing Agree to Disagree. One of those topics are a dating app. Should it be illegal to send someone an unsolicited nude picture? We talk about that next. Gene Ursula.